When this topic was proposed, the question was raised, you know, well, is anybody interested in the future of the family? And will anybody come? Or perhaps people don't care about it. So there's some evidence that people are less interested in at least talking about the family than they are about some other things. Also made an observation, we've had a couple of fora here on death, and the person's most, and this was observed by several people, the person's most interested in talking about death were men. Now, just a couple of moments ago, I took a count, and until several of you came in at least, at this gathering, women outnumbered men 5-1.
That was what they observed in that other class about the moral conduct of children, too, that the women were more interested in the child's development than men.
Yeah.
This week.
Yeah, okay, so I think that, you know, that's a point that we might want to keep in mind. I mean, somehow, the family and raising of children and so on seems to be somehow more regarded as a woman's job. This ice cream cone is a symbol of the family. It's soon going to disappear. Okay, the idea of these forums is to have a really open discussion where everyone can participate, and therefore the agenda is quite open. Actually, the group is to develop the agenda. You're to talk about the issues that you're interested in and talk about them in the way that you're interested in talking about them. And my task is simply to try to field questions and perhaps help in some clarification of issues if I can, but not to speak to you, and I'm no more of an expert about the family than any of you, and probably quite a bit less of an expert than at least some of you. There has been, however, let me just suggest a few topics, just kind of throw them out to start our thinking and then open it up. There has been in recent years, in the popular press, at least every now and then, an article with the title, you know, the headline, What is Happening to the Family? What's Gone Wrong? The implication has usually been that as the fate of the family goes, so goes the fate of our society or our nation. Should the family as a stable and a healthy institution decline, that would mean that something was really wrong with our society. And in these kinds of articles, which I've read on buses and trains and things, it seems that a number of causes for the decline of faith in the family or belief in the family have been named. And let me just suggest six or seven that I can remember. Not because I am trying to argue that they indeed are, but because they have been mentioned in some of these kinds of articles, and I think that perhaps in our conversation this evening we'd like to touch on one or two of them, maybe. Sometimes it's maintained that the family is falling apart because of a general loss of authority, by which I presume it's meant that children don't respect their parents, or they don't respect the authority of their parents, and the rebelliousness of the children, and perhaps the anticipated rebelliousness of children has led more and more adults to conclude that family life is not for them. Another factor frequently mentioned is that as America is becoming more and more urbanized, lifestyles are changing in a way which are not compatible with family life. People live in the city, and there's so many things that attract them in the city that they don't have the desire or need for children or family life. People, according to this notion, apparently raised families because they lived in the country, and the lifestyle there either demanded children, perhaps to help on the farm or something, or else you were so isolated out in the country that you really wanted to gather a family around you in order to overcome isolation. But living in the city, or more and more people living in the city, those kinds of needs no longer arise, therefore people don't want families. Another argument often made is that our society is becoming increasingly transient. And it's the case in my family, and I'm sure it's the case in many of your families. I live in Davenport, Iowa. My sister lives in Santa Fe, New Mexico. My parents live in New Jersey. My wife's parents live in Minnesota. And in the last 5 years, we've all had at least one move. And, how do you keep a family together when that happens? And that's a very typical kind of pattern. So that the transience of society caused by corporate policies and other things seems to be working against the family. Another argument sometimes made is that the pressure to marry is being diminished. If you were to talk to people of the marrying age, whatever that is, you would find more and more of them saying, no, I'm not sure that I want to get married. Whereas apparently 2 decades ago or so, everybody really wanted to get married. Another obvious factor is economics. Just the cost of raising a family is becoming more and more of a burden, and particularly if you believe that it is the responsibility of parents to put children through college and so on, then the cost gets to be outrageous. And according to some of these articles, why bother at all, if you can't do it right? Why should we raise children to be poor? Another factor has been, and this I guess relates to the observation that I made at the beginning, the effect of the women's movement. If it is the case that women were expected to raise the families, now that more and more women are entering into careers and becoming professional and finding identity in ways which does not demand them to be full-time housekeepers and mothers, perhaps that's having an impact. And then finally, family size is getting smaller because of more widespread use of contraception, because of some acceptance of abortion, and so on. So that that argument seems to suggest that many children were born that weren't planned. If people can plan their families now, they're simply not going to have as many children, and that of course would have an effect on the presence of families in society. Now, some of these arguments seem to me to be more serious than others, or more well-founded than others. A number of them overlap and interrelate. I just jotted down the ones that I could remember having read in at least once in a magazine article recently. So with this kind of general mapping out of the terrain, perhaps we could just open it up for discussion and any kind of reaction, and don't feel that you need to restrict yourself to the sort of things that I said. So the floor belongs to the floor. Does the family have a future? Should we worry about it?
I think one other point you maybe could have added was greater divorce rate now, which in a lot of cities is above 50%, and that's cited as a reason quite often in articles like that.
That's more often cited as an indication than a cause, but how do you interpret it, or what do you think it means?
Well, I think it's as much of a cause as the others, in that supposedly single-parent families are as viable as double-parent families, and that would lead to an erosion of family life as such.
there's kind of a lag effect too. I mean, children who grow up in families that where there has been a divorce, and there are enough of these now who are, say, the age of college students that I've talked to them, and they're very pessimistic about families typically, and reluctant to want to marry simply because, you know, they their most intimate acquaintance with the family and with marriage has been an unhappy one, and they're kind of shying away from it. Yeah.
I really think that there's hope for the family. Because it seems to me that we're really in an age of transition right now from the old authoritarian structure where the husband had his role as the authority and the woman had her role as the nurturer. And I see that breaking down, and that's one of the reasons why I really have hope, because I think we're going to have a lot more human situation, first of all in the husband-wife relationship and then with the family. But I really believe that before that can be successful, that we have to learn a whole new method of relationship between husband and wife. And one of the ways that, you know, that we've seen is through a lot more intimacy, a lot more communication and sharing with each other than has ever really been done in the majority of marriages in the past. It means a real total commitment, you know, of each to each, in that we share our total self with each other. And that takes practice, and that takes expertise, and first of all, because it hasn't really been done in the past. And I think that's really one of the challenges today for the church, to help that to happen in the lives of
your people. Your hope then is based on the idea that a new kind of marriage style is emerging, which will result in more stable marriages and more happier marriages and more lasting commitments, and that this will naturally then give rise to the desire to raise a family?
Yeah. I think, anytime a husband and wife can have a certain amount of stability within their own relationship, they have a greater tendency to want to you know, create a child, and to, because that child will supposedly have a beautiful place to live in. And also, that kind of a relationship means giving to each other, which almost has precludes, you know, giving to the child or wanting to have a child.
Yeah.
I like what you're saying, but I could also see it working the other way around. And that is, as we establish more and more the legitimacy of a man and woman enjoying each other for no other reason than just simply to enjoy each other and to live it, to expand their own, let's say, consciousness by having a partner, that the need to add children to that may not necessarily be a result. It may be, and I've observed this with more and more young couples that I've known, that their life is sufficient. Their life is sufficient with each other, and it oftentimes lovely relationships, lovely marriages, but they don't see the necessity of expanding it for whatever reason, are terrified, or scared, whatever the case may be, to add a child. I think in some, and we're glad for that, you know, when they say, let's create a child, that's marvelous, now that we have a chance to plan that carefully. But I see it working either way.
I think one of the paradoxes in that, too, is that often those couples would be would make the best parents, yeah, or provide the best family situations. And I think some figures have been done that declining birth rate is by and large due to well-educated, more affluent people not having as large families as undereducated, poor people, which is a real problem.
Yeah, I'd like you to follow up on this, because you made an interesting jump from talking about a relationship where people really understand each other and care for each other and work together, to couples that are affluent and well-educated. And it seems to me there's a natural bias in our society to think that affluence and education lead to happiness. and mutual respect and so on, but I wonder if, well, if that's really the case.
Well, I think to a certain extent it's obvious that the families that are parents that are well educated are going to provide better opportunities for their children as far as nurturing the love of learning, etc., in their children, and affluence will bring about a certain amount of added extra opportunities for the children that wouldn't be available.
Some of the most beautiful families I've seen are Mexican-American people who are extremely poor and may have a high school education if they're lucky.
Well, I think they're bound together by different factors.
No, but they have such a deep-rooted faith, I think.
And they have such an extended family structure, too.
Yeah, that's true.
I guess I just finished reading Giants in the Earth right before I drive out here, and it really struck me that...
Yeah, don't put a woman in a whitewashed hut in South Dakota in the winter.
I'm not going to do that media. marriages back then were not of the kind you're talking about now. They were marriages of economy and convenience and necessity, where what relationship that the parents had was very secondary to the family, and I think that I would agree with what Wayne said before about the increased closeness of couples. It often precludes children because they are very happy, sufficient on their own.
But it's not just the closeness. Don't you think a lot of the young people that are in their 20s now are still coming out of, or maybe deeply into, a feeling of fear, whether it be for economic disaster or nuclear disaster? They have a feeling that perhaps their generation is the last that should bother.
That's true. I think a lot of people my generation don't plan to have children now, which is fine for the country and a lot of ways. I don't think there's as much pressure now to have families as there was in the past. Maybe if the people that want to have children, the people who don't, will have a more stable population. There's a certain amount of fatalism, though. I agree with you on that. You're wondering what kind of world you're dealing with.
Yeah, whether it's basically that it's not selfishness, but self-content or fear, probably both.
I think it's both selfishness and self-content.
Yeah.
I think the conversation so far, the way I get it, is going to young people that are going to be coming.
Mm-hmm.
Are we talking about family as it exists today? You know, I think I really...
It may be helpful to talk about what's happening to families right now, yeah.
Yeah, I think I really, with what we've been doing, I really see a transition and a new awareness of what I think relationship and marriage has to be today because of all the pressures of and I think I've really noticed we've been traveling around quite a bit and involved in a few things that I see men, you know, kind of breaking out of that shell that they are the provider and they are kind of above the rest of the family, and I see them starting to get involved in the relationship and in raising the family and you know, being more for the family than just a provider. And I'm really hopeful, and I think we are evolving to something that we have to, because we can't operate in the same structure that my parents did, because we sat out on the plains and 13 kids and we needed just about all of them to work the land.
I think one of the things that refutes what you said about people not deciding not to have children is something that I read in the book Passages, which I'm sure many of you have read, that in fact women who and people who have decided not to have children, that when women get to be the career type woman gets to be 35 or 36, that she feels life passing by, and at that point she decides, or I would hope they decide that they will have a family. And maybe that's going to be more the trend, as it evidently is. at this point even, that women are deferring their, waiting to have children until they're older.
Aren't older parents supposed to be better parents anyway?
I would think so and hope so that that would happen.
Why are older parents better?
Because they're
educated and rich by then, is that? I don't mean to make a big joke of it. Yeah. Just sorry.
I withdraw that remark.
No, I really see that as when you're older. I mean, I know in our case when we were first married, all I was busy to prove myself that I could accomplish something, and also to provide, make a home and get started. And now I feel more relaxed and I would like to start over, especially with our older. I want to see that.
Wayne, you were going to defend older parents?
No, I think it's interesting here. What I would really like to hear is, even though the family is, the present status of the family, I think it's really happening. I'm at a position where I'd like to say to my son and daughter-in-law, hey, we'd love to be grandparents, how about it? and as a matter of fact, I think that was operating in previous generations. Mm-hmm. Aren't you about to have, thinking of that the kindly but rather serious pressure from our parents to have grandchildren, I think was a reality. And I think I feel very critical about doing that to my son and his wife. But I would really love to hear from those who are not married or are just early married, whether they plan to have children and why or why not.
Yeah, would anybody like to... You're not committing yourself. But as you look down the road, I mean, do you...
I'll talk to that. I'm
okay.
25, I'm not married, I was engaged, I broke it off. I'm glad I did. I hope that I would rather not get married until I was around 30. I think that sounds good, if ever. I particularly don't want to have children. For a kind of a selfish reason, a physical aspect of having children, that I could probably change that. I have hope for the family. But a lot, I can agree with what you say, and I can agree with what some of the things that he says. I feel that people today have more of a choice. You have a choice as to whether you want to have that family, and I think that's what's important. And I would hope we'll change the Pawtucket family to come because we made that choice. 5 years down the road, if I get married, if I don't, fine. I can do what I want. But if I do decide, it's because I chose, my husband and myself chose. And I think that's important to the Pawtucket family.
Now, you're saying that at this point, you're not looking forward to having children if you get married.
At this point, I don't particularly think that I want any.
Yeah, because you think that they're a lot of work. Is that the idea? Which is true, they are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they are. Yeah. I couldn't really say. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid of the future. In fact, I'm kind of optimistic about the future. I feel that you have to be. So I'm not afraid of that. I just feel that there are many things that I need to do with my life before I would have children, too. They come after those things, and then an extension of myself. But if I don't do those things first, I feel that my children will achieve it. So I've got to do them. And I don't know. I really don't. Who can say? But at this point, I will say that I don't care to have children.
Anybody else like to venture an opinion?
No. I think this is part of the change that we've spoken about, that we're going through, that women are finding that they do have some options, and they're finding, they want to find out more about themselves as persons and what they can do. And I think perhaps that this will change, as it gradually goes on, and as couples become more committed to each other, and men change because their attitudes in a great many cases are very, they tend to hold the women down. And when this is more evened out, maybe when they're thinking together, then maybe they will go back to having family.
Are you suggesting that, or perhaps you could just expand a bit, what do you mean men tend to hold women down? Were you suggesting that the family relationship tended to be exploitive of women, that they really were?
I think so. You know? In many relationships, I'm sure you all know couples like that, where the wife has to get permission to do something, or they can't do this, or they can't do that, and they have to really toe the mark, so to speak. It sounds very old-fashioned, but it's still true. And I think when this, you know, evens out a little bit, that perhaps this will all change. And couples will be ready to have families and share. And I think women can work and have families, as they're finding out. But you need to make a definite commitment, and many young people aren't ready to do that yet. It's more of a do your own thing.
I'll throw my two cents in too. Okay, I'm 22, and I'm recently engaged. And at times, this scares me into fits, because all my friends, all my really close friends, are 23, 24, because I skipped a grade, so all my friends are older than me. And none of them are yet engaged or ready to be married. And it's almost like I'm outside of the norm, my peers, I have more single friends than I do friends that are attached, which I suppose is a lot different, My mom said when I'd be hitting around 18, 19, all your friends are going to be engaged, you're going to be going, to all these weddings. I haven't been to one yet. And it's kind of like, also my fiancé is 2 years younger than me. And, it just, in the back of my mind, it really sometimes bothers me. Although, I get surges of reassurance, and it's not because of him, and it's not because of our relationship, but it's just the idea, I realize this is a deep commitment and I want to make it work. And I went through a lot, through college, to get the job that I've always wanted, and now I have it. I'm living in a small town, and I'm working for a church, and it's something, I wanted to do ever since I was little. And it's kind of like, don't take away all my candy. It's like the changing of a whole lifestyle. But I'm not worried about the marriage or, having kids. I'm looking forward to having kids. I wish, I'd love to have 20 kids, but and this is, where it enters in. For me, it's sad because I know that that's not today. I don't think, that's simply not economically possible. You can't afford it anymore like it used to be. And that's something that, I can just go, oh. But I feel like you do, if it hadn't happened the way it happened, it wouldn't bother me to wait till I was 30. It really bothers me that I'm 22 and I'm engaged.
But your apprehension then has to do with the possible need to give up your vocation. Is that right?
Yeah, we've discussed it because I said I don't want to give it up, and it's worked out beautifully. That I will be able to keep my job, and I've even talked over with Pastor. After I'm married, will I be able to stay here and keep my job? And he said, "Well, we were hoping you were." I said, it was important to me because it was something I had wanted, and it was one of the things that was really making things change. And also because I feel like I'm young yet to be making, such a deep commitment. Sometimes it bothers me. Although, I don't know, I guess things have just changed so much because, before so many people were getting married so much younger.
I disagree that large families, that you can't afford large families, because, well, I'm the oldest of six, and there's three of us in college now, and it's pretty expensive. My dad's a preacher, my mom's a nurse, and they're not really, you know, well, that well off, but we have to get along with some of the things that maybe some smaller families have. At the same time, the closeness and the fun that we have in a large family, it makes, I want a large family someday. I'm not going to put any age limit or time limit on it because there's no telling. I'm not going to say, that's in God's hands. That I have to leave to Him, because if I start saying, well, I'm not going to get married to this and that, that doesn't work, because who knows, I might meet someone tomorrow, you know, and that would just shoot everything. So the plans I got right now. I think that's something that a lot of young people nowadays say, well, I can't ever have a large family. They're too expensive. I don't think that's a valid argument at all. Because I think if you really, I mean, like Patty was just saying, it's more of a challenge to make a large family, to afford a large family. But it can work. And as long as you've got God and Christ as the center, it'll make it. At least in my opinion, it will.
Do you see any conflict, however, between being the mother of a large family and career interests? I know that you have career plans.
I do. I think that it might come a time where I might have to quit for a while. And I see it in my mother. I look at my mother as an example, because she is a registered nurse. She's a surgical nurse, and she works full time to help meet financial needs, whatever. And I can see where sometimes she has a problem of thinking that her family's not getting enough attention. But then in talking, I think that we've had plenty of attention, more attention than we deserve. Both of our parents, really. I mean, I really feel that. I feel like they've given everything they possibly can give. And as far as myself, I hope that I have enough sense to realize when I can, when I do have a family, that has to come first, and that my career, the career that I plan for myself for a while, I talked this over with a lot of people that are in higher positions than I am in the same career, that I've said, you know, I think a family is very important to me, and that I can work my career around it because of the way I plan to do it. How can I explain that?
Could you tell us what it is?
I'm going to vet school in the fall. And that's 3 years straight of school. And then what I'd like to do is work with another veterinarian. I am not the kind of person that likes to do everything on my own or be the top dog, so to speak.
I can hardly think of a better term.
I don't want to run my own clinic, because that would leave me the freedom to go off and do other things, to have a family. I plan later on to go into research, which also is a full-time thing, but at the same time, I believe that a family can work through that. And it's real hard for me to say what's going to happen, because I don't know who I'm going to marry, I don't know when I'm going to get married, I don't know when I'm going to have children. All that said, it all is going to be in the future, and it's something that I can't worry about now. So I have to leave that in God's hands.
How would you feel, though, if, okay, let's say you met this guy tomorrow, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden, all the plans, your hopes of being a veterinarian were, you know, all of a sudden, they weren't necessarily thrown out the window, but they were put on shakier grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Wouldn't that make you a little apprehensive mm-hmm. to say, you know, hey, wait a minute? You know, I've done some thinking about my life, and there are a couple things I'd like to do.
Yeah, really. You know, it's funny, because a lot of these questions I got when I was in the interview board for vet school. I said, well, what if you got a man that's, you know, stubborn as you are? I said, well, I hope that in getting to know each other, because the way I feel, like, to really love somebody, you have to really know them. And for them to really love me enough to marry me, they have to really know that to be a whole person, this is something I would have to do. And that the time thing is not that important. So if we really love each other, what's 3 years? I mean, yeah, that sounds like a long time, but I found out the 4 years I just spent as an undergraduate went awful, awful fast. And I can see the next 3 years going just as fast, if not faster.
We went together 5 years.
I'd like to say something in response to what you brought up. And some of the things that I heard going on, things like transition and choice. I'm 22, just graduated from college, and definitely have a career in mind. I definitely would like to be married and have a family. I don't have any plans right now. But what I hear as far as planning a family, from the woman's standpoint, I would hope that when I decide that I'm going to get married and I'm going to have a family, that, well, no, I shouldn't put it that way at all, because it's not going to be just my choice. It's going to be a choice between myself and my husband. And when we decide to have children, I don't think that just because it's, you know, the physical thing that the woman has the child, you know, obviously that presents some real complications that you just have to deal with as far as taking off work, you know, and working around that. But once the family is established and once the children are born, I don't think that it's going to be just a question of the woman making the sacrifice in her career. And this is where I see the matter of transition coming in, and the women's movement, in that I think I can have a career and I can have a family, but it's not going to be just my sacrifices. It's going to be both myself and my husband. And he may have to take some sacrifices in his career. And I think this has been a thing that's been really looked down upon in our society, that, you know, if your husband gets offered promotion someplace, boy, you just follow him. It doesn't matter what, you know, it does to your family or your own, the woman's career. And there may come a time when my husband has to make a sacrifice in his career for the sake of the family. And this is where the matter of choice comes in, that it's both of our choice and both of our sacrifice. And I see too much of this conversation being directed only toward the woman and her career and how she's going to handle the family and the career. And that's not the way I look at it at all.
So it's got to be both of them.
I just find it interesting that we're talking about what I think is just the need for family right now, and we're all, and not other forms of family. I also find it interesting that we're talking about children after marriage only, and not single parent, either biological or adopted. And I'm surprised. I don't know. Does anybody? Is that the way the family, the future's going? And it is.
Yeah, I was going to attempt a generalization and raise, I think, these questions with a couple of others. It seems to me that there was a consensus here that the nuclear family, and the way that we're talking about it, if it's going to be a viable and successful form in the future, will only be so if certain kinds of adjustments can be made, a new kind of attitude about the character of the marriage relationship, in which the old roles of man, provider, woman, housekeeper are broken down and more reciprocal. Now, it seems to me that given that, it may be the case that many people are simply going to say that I do not want to get married, or that I simply can't find the right person, you know, that I can work with in this way. I'd like to, but somehow it just doesn't happen. So that perhaps it's going to be the case that the nuclear family, as we've been talking about it, either the old nuclear family based on these kinds of strict rules, or the new nuclear family that many of you hope will be the case, simply will not be a predominant social form. Now, question is, what impact will this have on society at large? And the questions about single parenting seem to me to be important. Questions about other forms of family living together. You know, there are kinds of semi-communes which work like large extended families, and perhaps some of you have some actual acquaintance with such a family. There have been in Chicago and Philadelphia and Washington and New York fairly long-term so-called extended families like this. Anyway, general question, and then we'll let you pick up in whatever ways you're interested. What impact do you see on American society in the future if the nuclear family is no longer the predominant social form, so that more and more people are living as singles or living in other kinds of social relationships?
I think that if that would be the case, and I would hope that that will be the case, in that if that happens, people would be making a choice. And you would choose to be single, you would have the choice if you wanted to be a single parent, if you wanted to marry and have children, that was a choice. I feel that that makes for a lot more happier people. And in the end, maybe some of the reasons that the families have been deteriorating is because people have been forced into marriage, have been forced into having families that they didn't really want. And if everything, if in the future it was people's personal choices, it might work out just fine, just beautiful, because people would be happy with their choices.
Nyla, did you have some more thoughts about this when you raised the question?
Well, I guess I think that the thing that parents issue, whatever you want to call it, the single parent trend, I guess I find that really exciting, that, that there are support groups around single parents. You know, single parents, you know, men can adopt children and they don't have to have a baby. Men can get custody of children if the marriage does become law. And men are being more and more recognized by the court that as nurturers too, and that, I find that exciting. And I think that probably a lot of children would have had, maybe, would have been reared more stably than they've been reared by their fathers or by their I'm just interested in the other people's ideas on this.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make an observation. I teach a lot of 14-year-old girls. I help them. So this crosses my mind. We're approaching this, you know, far differently than people who are going to be coming down the way, and from a wider prospect than a Christian background. These are some of the things that I observe through my students. They do not look at the choices that they see the adult parents in their life as being happy choices. And so they're beginning to reflect this kind of a very colloquial kind of thing. I think that adults are screwed up in their choices literally and figuratively. And where am I going to go with my choice about how I want to have a family? And then the other observation is the biggest increase right now, if we're going to talk about children being born, is in teenagers who have the least equipment to be, you know, parents from that kind of thing. So I just want to toss those two observations in, you know. What impact will these two kinds of things have? Their observation and decision is on what the adults doing, and the fact that they're becoming parents.
Are you somehow relating those
this
two?
This relates, you know, to
I mean the
summing
two.
Up the single parent and the other lifestyles, and so where the kids really are and where the families really are being formed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so question mark on the impact of, you know, the future of the family.
Yeah.
It certainly is apparent that the raised feminine consciousness has really had its impact on at least a number of people here. And I would really think that there probably is another raised consciousness that element that has to be said. About 10 years ago, in the Saturday Review, I happened to read, I happened to be reading something, and I didn't even know what the topic was in that particular article that had to do something with families. But I came across a statement that I thought at the time was one of the most cynical I'd ever seen. And yet, after revisiting it, it had something to say, and that is that this person just simply said, I'd have more respect for motherhood if the requirements were higher. And I think it has a pretty lethal element connected with it. And that is, somehow we think that because we're biologically equipped to have children, that really is just a matter of, well, shall we or shall we not? I think as time goes on, it's really becoming abundantly clear that we're going to have to also heighten other consciousnesses. I applaud the one that had to do with the heightened sense of femaleness. I think it was long overdue, and I think it's appropriate. But I think maybe a heightened consciousness in more serious terms than just how much is this going to inconvenience me if I have children. By saying, maybe we are going to have to this sounds terrible, maybe, recruit parents. Recruit the right people. I teach classes in child psychology, and I say, I wish I could tell you to go out and procreate, because I think you're great. I think you're the right people as your parents. And if I don't get in trouble with the dean and the president, I'd say that to you. You're educated. You're pretty well put together. Then there's an average chance that you are pretty well educated. But somehow, I don't think that this can be left to luxury, just too much more in terms of a social well-being. I'm not looking for a controlled society. But in terms of just simply saying, well, have children or not, I think we need also to work at a heightened consciousness of what it means to be a parent.
It raises another issue, too, because your students who are potentially very good parents may, however, live in a society where being good parents is very hard. And perhaps
that's a possible reason for asking them to be parents. You know, I don't think that we start out by saying, look, this society is pretty troubled and pretty fractured and all those bad things. I think people who are integrated personally, I have great confidence in saying, look, you can do it. I can't tell you how at this moment, but I couldn't tell how I was going to do it when I started out in marriage, but you can do it. You can do it, and you'll have joy. Others, I would say the opposite.
Okay, here's a new hand.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know just how to say it. I'm 51, and I'm an art teacher. So, and I'm an abstract painter. I just would like to bring out one thing that I don't think has been mentioned, and that is that that part that might look like magic, and that I think is the greatest blessing that we could have as humans, and that is of getting together, the husband and wife, and having a child. I think this can be the most beautiful thing of all. It has been for us. I just don't want anything any more wonderful.
May I say something about that? I agree, it can be the most beautiful thing, but what if you don't want that marriage? What if you don't find that person? Then are you, am I as a single person, denied that? I never reached the total height of being a human being just because I didn't get married and have a child?
No. I think you might misunderstand a little.
Maybe I did. I don't know.
No, you probably didn't. I meant what I said, but... I mean, like you said earlier, if you did meet someone, this could possibly be. And I feel if you do meet someone, this magic that I spoke about will take place between the two of you, and then from there things will go by themselves. And I think as far as the woman trying to tell herself that her career and she should have some adventures before this or before that, doesn't necessarily have to be the highest goal, because I've seen it happen that many times that this comes together. And then if you just seek out a profession and get this is fine, but having both would be so much more.
Let me pose the question this way and see if I'm on the track, if I'm understanding some of the things being said. I think all of us agree that if parents have a child and want the child and love the child, that it is a very beautiful experience. Yet it's still not the case, at least in our society most of the time, that these parents have the either duty or chance to raise a child completely in all respects. That is to say, children go to school and spend a certain amount of time having some of the rearing duties taken on by somebody else. Now, could we imagine a situation where both husband and wife are engaged in careers and therefore have much less time each day to take care of the, you know, functions of raising the children, and therefore the most desirable living situation might be something like, say, one of the kibbutzes in Israel, where children are actually cared for in many ways by the common group, and the parents have a very special and unique and individual relationship to their child, but nevertheless do not take them through every single step. Would somebody care to react to that? Is that, you know?
Well, I think that the quality of time that parents spend with their children is more important than the quantity of time. I came from a family where both my parents worked all the years that I was growing up, and all the women I was around worked. I was a little bit naive on that. I thought all women worked. I was fortunate. Well, okay, all right. Excuse me. you know what? But I think you could make some cases for maybe less time spent more effectively is in some cases being better. I met a traveling salesman a couple years ago. I travel in my job, we're used to. And he had kids that were grown out of college, and he'd been traveling all of his life. He was only home weekends. And he was very proud of his family, and he was very proud of saying that he thought he did more with his kids on weekends than other families did on a seven-day basis, because they were all conscious of the limited amount of time, and they spent it well. And as far as wives working and other things, I think you can make a case that through their work, wives might bring home more valuable experiences to share with their children, and might have more positive follow-up than they're spending time at home, maybe with the child parked in front of the TV set. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that working is the issue at all. I think it's just what you choose to do with your time.
Well, let's imagine a situation like this. The husband is a traveling beer salesman, let's say, and on the road a lot, and the wife is a brain surgeon.
Why are we laughing?
That's the issue.
The
issue.
Issue.
I didn't. Well, at any rate, she has a career and he has a career, each of which requires that they be away from home a lot, perhaps attending conferences and so on and so forth. Then the children are living where, you see? I mean, is that something we could look forward to with hope and optimism and improvement? Yeah.
I think it's a matter of the attitude with which you do this. Now, I'm a working mother, and apparently quite defensive about my position, but I think that if your attitude towards work is because it's something that you choose to do, not something that you're sent forth to do, and that the children understand this, that it's a whole different attitude, and that the quality time that you talked about is true too. My children are like he, I guess, in that they believe that most women work, and it's a situation that's very agreeable in our family. My husband is, the reason I'm here is my husband is putting the babies in. But, we have worked this through. And it's not, I couldn't have said this when I graduated from college because things are not at all the way I thought they were going to be. But God has worked it in our life that I have gotten a lot of the things, most of the things that I had goals for doing. None of them have come forth the way I had planned them. And so I think that I agree with her that God has to be the central point in your family. And then to go back to what I was saying before, I think that your attitude with which you do these things is probably the most important thing. Not what you do, but the way you go about doing it.
I sense that in this group there's a strong feeling that we really want to preserve the nuclear family. We're convinced that it's important, and maybe the question is, what really is the most important thing about it that we want to preserve?
Can I say something about that? And that's because you've got the support group, and I think a lot of families, and I think if you've gotten so much support you need as a parent raising a family, and they've abandoned relatives. We move all over the country, so you never see grandparents or aunts and uncles or someone else who can say some positive things to your child as an adult, or some negative things, but it's not coming just from the parent. People don't have much in common with neighbors, so your neighbors aren't your support group, because no one is home in the neighborhood anymore. Housewives aren't support groups, there's no one home, to support each other. We have lost, two people raising children. It's very difficult in one person. Whether it's a good beginning you support or your relatives or close friends, it are close friends for years and years and years and not just a couple of months while you're in a community. And I think that's a real problem in the United States, is not having permanent relationships with a wide number of people.
There is one organization in the United States that speaks to that, and I think very beautifully. It's called the Christian Family Movement. And what it involves is five or six couples getting together on a weekly or a bi-weekly basis, twice a month, well, or monthly basis, whatever they choose. And they you get a program book, and it's a kind of a thing where you become intimate very quickly because you reveal yourself to each other very quickly. And so and that's part of the understanding that's what we have to do. That's the only way we're going to have support group. And the program is set up so that it does work. And some of these people move to new cities and then they find another similar group. I think the church could do that.
Members of the group have some common beliefs and commitments, and then they through this program try to establish an ad hoc extended family
right.
as a support group.
Uh-huh.
When you were talking about kibbutzism, I don't know that much about them, but when we had that forum about Israel, and Connie talked about the kibbutz, and she was very positive about it. That doesn't sound like anything I'd be interested in. I would only have children because I want to raise them the way I have ideas already, different ways I want to bring up a family, because I really believe in having a strong nuclear family, and stronger than what I came from, and I can think of ways I'd like to do it differently. For support group, I think I would look to the church and different things that the church could be doing. Somebody could fit in with that group you were talking about. Today, I've heard that one of the strongest family units is in the Mormon church, and I haven't read very much about that, but can anyone speak to why they've got such a strong family unit and what they've got going for them?
Well, I know one thing they do, and that's they have a family night. And come hell or high water, the whole family gathers together on this night, and they do things together. It may be games, it may be scripture, it may be prayer, whatever turns the family on.
Mm-hmm.
They've got books out, giving ideas for this, and they're totally committed to their family. I know that.
I've heard some things that I don't really agree with too much, and the one thing is, isn't the father just a real strong patriarch? figure.
I think that's right. I think
the Mormons have managed to preserve the old style nuclear family with the authoritarian father and the mother who's, I don't know that for sure, but I do know a number of Mormons in our community, and that's where
they're tremendously conscious of genealogy too, right? It's so important who your ancestors were, and I think that gives you an increased sense of what your own family is.
But I don't think that'd be necessary. And they also have a very strong feeling of community. They really stick together in their churches with each other and support each other. That's really
the thing. I think there are a lot of positive things that, you know, we could look into what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of other people have comments about the issue of support groups. So.
Well, aside from the issue of support group, I think what we're looking at married, what's the alternative? And it seems like the thing is that it's some real happy thing, you know, out here somewhere. And it's really kind of a sad state. I know in my case, when I was to be married, I couldn't really find a marriage that I wanted to pattern mine after, you know, because my parents, my dad died when I was quite young. I didn't ever really see a relationship that I'd say, yeah, I want to be like that. And I think that's important. And I think that's why it's important that we really look at marriage and make it the beautiful, sacred thing that it is, you know. It's a lifetime commitment to one person. And I've seen a lot of people make commitments. I've had some of my family do that to a person. Well, this is this beautiful relationship, and all of a sudden it isn't anymore, you know. And I don't think that's been tried or tested long enough to say, well, yeah, this is really where it's at. I really think we have something beautiful to marry, and I highly recommend that. I could find nothing in the world better for me. I can't speak for anybody else. But I think if, in fact, we can give people to really love, and the best thing I can give my family is a good relationship, you know, a good love relationship here. And it's not easy. And I don't think anybody ever said it would be. But it's really gratifying, it's satisfying, you know, to live in that.
Yeah.
I think it's worth mentioning that the way of the Western world is that marriage is the end of a romance, and mm-hmm. the Eastern culture, marriage is the beginning of love. And that part of it, not that it shouldn't be there beforehand, but it certainly is something to build. It doesn't stop. That's a good thing to think about before you begin with it, that it's something you build and grow into.
Although sometimes if you talk to family counselors and psychiatrists, they will point out that a lot of trouble in marriages is based on expecting too much, you know? I mean, what is that thing in Fiddler on the Roof? You're married, but do you love her? What's that got to do with it?
That's what they were saying, though, when you were speaking to that issue, that you expect the day you're married, this magic thing happens and everything's going to be okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, I took it that you were advocating the Eastern ways.
Yes,
that's better, but
it was growing.
Yeah,
growing.
The only point I wanted to make, and I mean merely to report this as a fact, is that very often, psychiatric counselors and family counselors will say, look, one of the problems with your marriage is you're expecting too much of it. What do you expect to be in love? You know? Anybody want to respond to that?
Just
I don't know, 13 years, I'm still in love.
I think Phyllis is talking about this because we've been struck by a number of Indian Hindu marriages that we've known personally. Yeah. And we're delighted to know this one lovely fellow by the name of Naeem Gupta, who always changed his V's and W's around. He described his Orthodox Hindu wedding, and he ended up, he never had seen Chala for more than 15 minutes before they were married. He said, and then in the middle of the ceremony, we exchanged our wows.
They
really did, but they grew.
They
didn't know each other before, but
they
grew.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Use the word commitment. I think that's the key.
Uh-huh. We've worked through that in our marriage. This thing of expecting too much of each other, and it's something that can be worked through. But it's real because it happened to us.
Uh-huh.
So in further support of the family, I would like to tell you I was in Phoenix 2 weeks ago at the end of the convention of the General Federation of Women's Clubs, and the international president has as her special emphasis programs for the next 2 years, preserving our free enterprise system and the family. She feels very strongly that both of these need to be strengthened, and because this is what our whole country is based on. And there is going to, that's 10 million women.
Yeah, well, that issue is interesting because why are those two issues?
Government, for one thing.
Well, why is the whole society, so dependent on the future of the family? That's...
Well, I think it is.
Yeah.
Just like she said, commitment to each other. We have a commitment to... We just had our 28th wedding anniversary, and I really couldn't want to live any other way. And I'm glad that I took care of my children when they were little. I didn't go to work until they were in school. And I wouldn't have passed up those hard days, but special days.
Would it be detrimental to the society where people who are not yet married, by and large, decide that they didn't want to be married? Would it be impossible for them to have stable, long-range, committed relationships?
It wouldn't be, but what is it for them, but what is it going to do to the children?
Yeah.
Well, I guess I have some real special concerns about elderly people, and I think this is one of the most practical aspects about preserving the nuclear family is what happens to senior citizens. I think in the next few years, 10 or 15 years, percent of senior citizens are going to be the largest block of people in the country. Mm-hmm. And although children don't have the same interest in their parents, I think as they used to, as far as providing for them, taking them into their homes and all, I think that as the population of senior citizens grows, that it have them somehow tied to a family would alleviate all sorts of potential problems and enhance their own lives. I think we would, as a society, have a lot of ill effects if we had millions and millions of unattached, unrooted senior citizens. I think that's a real practical consideration in preserving the nuclear family.
No?
There are so many other kinds of structures like that senior citizens and young people can fit into, I guess. I see our prisons, this small example of our worship group that we acquired, has senior citizens and very young people in a nucleus of about probably 15 families. And of those 15, about 8 of us are all within walking distance. And we're really the extended family for all of us who don't have our own blooded extended families near us. And they're the people, and that group is the people that helps me. I'm employed for money outside the home. They help me with the child care, and I help them. We all work together. I think that senior citizens are people who have so much to give that I don't think they should be limited to giving only to their own immediate family.
No,
they might always have that choice of being able to give to a group like yours. I agree with Mike.
Yeah. I think
there's a social security and all that stuff, but it might not be there 20 years from now.
But the point, I think, is...
Who takes them in? The people that are in our group, care for them, they're part of us.
That's great, but not everyone has that opportunity.
This is one example of the way a family...
I think that a point to be understood is that the only two possible alternatives are not having senior citizens
you know, in the grandpa room in the back of the nuclear family's nest, or, you know, somehow alienating from society and leaving them alone. I mean, I think you're quite right to say that, that to do that is inhuman in many ways, and certainly a loss of national resource. But there are other possibilities for organizing society where elderly people could be part of a community. And I think that's the sort of thing that Nyla says is working in their neighborhood, and it seems to me could work in other ways. But it's not dependent, I don't think, on the survival of the nuclear family as we've been talking about it, you see. Is that a fair...
I have a question.
Yeah.
What is the difference then? I mean, it seems like we're talking about a single family or single or whatever. The basic difference then would be if it's a church sanctioned, I guess, if you believe in this Christian marriage, or you're saying you make the commitment to one other person, whether it's in marriage or not. What is the difference then between that and marriage? You're basically living the same.
No, I didn't mean a commitment to live together when I mentioned that before. I meant unmarried people having other persons whom they could rely on.
Yes, yeah.
So, you say a kind of relationship of integrity and permanence.
I think it's interesting that what you're saying involves a heck of a lot of commitment, even outside of the nuclear family. And I wonder if that isn't probably a real core issue. That you have to commit yourself to somebody else or to some group for happiness, because that's the kind of people we are.
Yeah, somebody said the key word is commitment, and I suppose that would be another point that we would all agree upon. Then the question is, are commitments more difficult outside of the nuclear family than in the nuclear family, or does the nuclear family in some way in a broad way that would affect all of society, ensure that there are going to be more stable, committed relationships? I think that things like the rising divorce rate suggest that the nuclear family, as we've known it so far, hasn't done that much for our society in strengthening, preserving commitments.
Well, but what kind of commitment is it just to live together? If you get married, that's commitment. I don't see that there's that kind of a commitment in some other arrangement. The commitment comes with saying, I'm going to stick with you, what is it, richer or poorer. You don't think it's going to be poorer. You don't think it's going to be worse. You think it's going to be better.
A lot of people have said vows like that and haven't meant the commitment. That's the only point I was...
They aren't really committed.
That's right.
The first trouble that comes along, well, goodbye.
No.
I don't think that's fair. I mean, people have been divorced and been very committed to each other. There's some, lower commitment in the divorce that there's some trouble, but I don't think we can make a blanket statement.
And if I'm committed to someone, I was thinking along a completely different vein when we started talking about being committed to each other. I didn't even think of, just living with another person. I was thinking of people like I'm committed to Rosa Philman, who is 74 years old and the church secretary of our congregation, a more beautiful woman I've never met. She's never been married. She's one of those people, they say some people in Christ glow? She's one of those glowers. She just goes around and just, bestows love and kindness and all the stuff on people. And she's committed to Laura Jacobson, who is 96 and lives all by herself in a house. And, washes her own curtains, and they all get together and they go out for breakfast at 6 in the morning. And I think, what you're talking about, the nuclear family of, blood and blood and kid might not always be where your deepest commitments are. You can bring into your commitment field, or I don't know how to describe it, your area, your group of people you're committed to, whoever you choose to bring in. And it's not, sometimes that's not your blood relation. Sometimes you can be closer to people who are outside of your, blood relation, family. And because you can be more committed to people outside of your... Like, I guess that's all I want to...
At least you've illustrated the possibility of commitments which are independent of the nuclear family. And that was the sort of thing I was talking about. I didn't mean to suggest some sort of... I didn't mean to correlate commitment with living together at all.
Seems to me that perhaps, too, that the Christian marriage or the Christian concept of the family is going to become much, much different from other people's definition of family, perhaps. So that perhaps, as Christians, we look at it one way, as people who are not Christians may look at it a different way. And I don't know if I necessarily believe this, but it's just something that I have read, that as time goes on and if things keep going the way they are, that Christians will become more and more a minority with a completely different point of view, and living in a non-Christian world will be a minority with all our ideas.
I think if we're truly Christian, we don't limit ourselves to our nuclear family. We encompass all kinds of people that we know, and that's the way it should be. We shouldn't be limiting to just our own little circle.
Well, I didn't mean that. I just meant that the family would be different than...
Right, but I know you didn't mean that, but I do think that if we really, we should be able to expand and include many other people.
You said, moving, you speak as if this is in the future. I think my observation with my students are that we are there right now. And I think my concern with the educating process, not just the professional educating process, but a daily educating process is, what ways, we as Christians, influence the idea of commitment and the importance of family and the stability of the family, to share our view and to expound this kind of thing so it's taken in and, utilized by people who do not have this kind of an opportunity to see these kind of models, because the models that they're seeing, do not have this view. And that's what I hear, daily. By 60% of my students, at least, a whole school year long. And, as I listen, this reflects a view of of a discipline or a thing that we believe in. But we're talking about the future of the family, of a whole country of people. We're talking about, what you said is a minority opinion. I'm really concerned about, what we can do with our minority opinion to influence, the total picture of the future family.
Yeah. When we spoke about the third world and poverty and so forth, we ended with one possibility of being a witness in the world. And it was your marriage in this Richmond group through the church, right? I think that's something we can ask of our own parishes, wherever we are, that if it's possible to pay and enrich those families, for the benefit of marriages, it would be really worthwhile.
Well, I usually like to think of these forums lasting about an hour, and then if anybody is kind of a hardcore devotee of the topic, we can continue on. So no one needs to feel embarrassed about leaving at this point, but those of you that want to continue and talk about this, our only rule is we let the people upstairs sleep.